Shift is brought to you by Deloitte. The automotive industry is evolving, and fast. At Deloitte, we understand the challenges you face and are here to help you respond, recover, and thrive, even as you may face the unknown. Our global network of professionals can help you navigate through today's complex issues so that you don't have to go it alone. To learn more, visit Deloitte.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Shift, a podcast about mobility. I am Pete Bigelow, your host and reporter at the Automotive News.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Allen, editor of Shift Magazine.
And Alexa St. John, covering tech and suppliers.
Joining us in just a few minutes is Michael Dunn, founder and chief executive officer at ZozoGo, an investment advisory company that helps automotive businesses do business in Asia. Michael is the first two-time guest on the Shift podcast, and we thought it would be very good to check in with him regarding the recovery of China's business climate and kind of glean some insights from him on how China is recovering from COVID-19 and how their autonomous vehicle companies in particular are faring. But first, a lot of developments this week, guys. We've got Intel buying MoveIt for $900 million. We've got Elon Musk apparently just homeless on purpose. What's going on out there?
Well, at least with Elon Musk, the latest thing, you know, he's been on Twitter a lot lately, as he seems to live on Twitter. And apparently, just on Friday, he sent out more than a dozen tweets in less than 75 minutes. And one of them said that he's going to be selling almost all of his physical possessions. And it makes you wonder, you know, last year, I think the story was that Tesla was building vehicles in a tent. Does this mean they're going to be that Mr. Musk is going to be living in a tent as well? Or what's going to happen with that, I wonder?
That's a great question. I think, he's going to pull out his sleeping bag and sleep on his office couch. Maybe he's there so often that he doesn't really need the bother of having to like retreat to a home at the end of the day. I'm not quite sure, but obviously never a dull moment with him.
Yeah, obviously he has a vested interest in that, having his gigafactory in Nevada and his assembly plant in California. But Pete, I wanted to ask you about a story that came out earlier this week, and that's about this huge investment in MoveIt, which is a company that deals with public transit and figuring out how to get people around cities and things like that. And what's going on right now with public transit? I'm thinking that might be one of the areas that's going to be hardest hit by COVID-19.
Yeah, I've actually, I've been working on a story on that that topic that is probably due out next Monday. So our listeners can perhaps look for that. But, I think there's a lot of short-term pain for public transit is the short answer right here. Riders are afraid to be in places with multiple strangers, and transit agencies are trying to figure out how they're going to decontaminate vehicles and working on routing adjustments and probably service cuts right now. So there's a lot going on in the short and probably medium term. We'll see if riders kind of respond and feel safe in public transit vehicles or buses, trains, et cetera, or do they search for other options? And those could be as divergent as bicycles or going out and buying their personally owned vehicles in greater numbers. So a lot of uncertainty right there. Clearly, bringing it back to you asked about Intel and MoveIt, clearly Intel still thinking long-term with this acquisition of MoveIt, which is a mobility as a service app provider that kind of stitches together different travel modes for users in a given city or area. So clearly, I think judging by the acquisition, they don't see a long-term disruption in either public transit or mass transit ridership.
Now, it'd be interesting to watch what happens with that. And another thing that this whole Intel story tells me is that there is a place still for investments in mobility. I mean, we're talking about a $900 million investment. I mean, really get your head around that. And I think there was some fear that some of this venture capital and other types of investments that was going to dry up. But it looks like it's not quite gone yet. So let's keep an eye on it and see what that happens.
What's interesting about that to me, Leslie, is that, you know, here you have a Bay Area tech company making the big investments. And I do wonder if what we'll see over the next year or two is that automakers who have to kind of focus on their core business will be hindered in that they cannot make these sort of investments that you know, the pure tech companies can. And how does that affect the trajectory of how these services develop over the next 10 years? Is this kind of COVID period tip the scales further toward Silicon Valley and further away from Detroit? You know, I think a lot of companies right now in the Detroit area, be it the automakers or suppliers, are kind of worried about survival, or they're, you know, cutting mobility programs to focus on the core of making vehicles, making a profit. Alexa, do you see anything more in that realm, you know, on the automaker or supplier front right now?
Well, I think that's really important to mention, you know, as we talked about in Monday's episode and my story that ran this past week, you know, there's so much uncertainty for automakers and suppliers. I mean, regardless of how established they are, you know, exactly what you said is right. They have to prioritize their investments right now. And especially on the supply end, when they're just generally low on cash, let alone in a pandemic crisis like we're in right now, you know, they have a lot more concerns pertaining to the short term than to the long term. Our Automotive News Data Center, in fact, put out a survey just over the last couple of weeks, kind of gauging where suppliers are at amid all of this. And, you know, many are concerned that they're going to see a decline in revenue just for this year of, you know, 10 to 25%. So, you know, they could see substantial losses here, and that, you know, will probably translate to having to cut back or shelve some of these ideas later on.
Well, good, you know, synopsis of the news here, guys. Let's turn now to our conversation with Michael Dunn from Zozo Go. He is going to tell us about the public car buying habits in China right now and what that means for congestion, for mass transportation, state of the supply chain opening up again in China, and overall just what automotive companies in North America need to know and understand about Asia as it comes out of the COVID-19 crisis. So we're going to take a short break right now, and we will be back with Michael Dunn.
Anticipating and preparing for tomorrow's complex issues can be a challenge. The automotive industry is one of highs and lows and everything in between. At Deloitte, we understand the challenges you face because we've spent years working in this industry. To gain timely insight and to keep apprised of changes in consumer behavior, consumer buying patterns, and overall consumer sentiment, check out the Deloitte Global State of the Consumer Tracker that provides global data to help keep you well informed as you strive to keep pace with the fluid demands of today's customers. The Deloitte Global State of the Consumer Tracker tracks the responses of over 12,000 consumers across 13 countries. For the most up-to-date information, be sure to visit and subscribe at Deloitte.com.
Michael Dunn, welcome to the Shift Podcast. You are the founder and chief executive officer at Zozo Go, an investment advisory company that helps automotive companies do business in Asia. And more importantly, you are the first two-time guest on the Shift Podcast. Welcome back.
Terrific. Great to be with you again, Pete.
Well, good to have you here, Michael. Where are you today, just so we get an idea of where you're riding out coronavirus?
You know what? I'm looking out the window, blue skies and sunshine. I'm in San Diego, California, and that's where I've been ever since the start of the year. I haven't been back to Asia since last year, so that's highly unusual. Normally, I'm there, gosh, every 4 to 6 weeks. And well, because of the coronavirus, everything's come to a standstill in terms of travel. So I'm here in San Diego.
All right. I'm here in, you know, the far Detroit suburb, far western Detroit suburbs. And, you know, like you, finding the rhythm of the travel schedule disrupted. And it can be a little shell-shocking to be at home for such a long period of time.
It can. You know, everyone talks about, well, I'm traveling this week or I'm traveling next week. Now, no one does. And you can't hide behind that excuse anymore. Everyone knows that everyone's at home.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we're coming live from our Zoom conversation here. Let's go ahead and start about what do we know about China today here on April 23rd? How much has business opened up again? And, you know, to what extent is a recovery underway there?
Right. Think of China as probably 8 to 10 weeks ahead of us in the coronavirus experience curve. They are coming back to work. There's cars on the street. People are going to the office, but it's certainly not back to normal. It's stepping into a new normal. And just to give you a couple illustration of what that means, our office in Beijing is open, but attendance at the office is staggered by regulation. And what does that mean? Half of the employees at any given time can be in the office. They want spacing. They want safety. That's number one. Only half of the normal number of people go to the office on a given day. Second thing is at every public, you go to a restaurant, to the bank, you name it, there are temperature checks. Even as you come in and out of the place where you live, guards will check your temperature. And if you are too high, you go directly into quarantine for at least 14 days. So imagine that everywhere you go, temperature checks. Third thing is masks. Now, we've started to wear masks here in the United States, but in China, it's been a mandate for a couple of months now. You just don't see anyone out on the street in China without masks on. So checking masks and spacing has become a new normal for 1.4 billion people, if you could imagine it.
That is you know, disruptive, and it is hard to wrap our heads around, but obviously something like that would not be a surprise here, even though it would have been shocking to say that 6 weeks ago.
That's right. My Asian friends would see pictures of us a few weeks ago not wearing masks and ask, hey, do you need us to ship some to you because you guys don't have masks on? That's just a no-no. And now we're there. Now we're beginning to get it.
What does a new normal in China look like as far as transportation goes, whether that's on the mass transportation side of things or on the car ownership side of things?
All right. So the market obviously took a huge hit in February, down 80%. In March, it was down 50%. And talking with executives in the industry just yesterday in China, they think April will be down again, maybe 25, 30%. For the year, the outlook is down 15 to 20%. So you say 15, 20% on a base of 25 million, that adds up quickly to 4 or 5 million units a year. So we are easing into a recovery. Demand is picking up, but it isn't a kind of demand where there's conviction and exuberance. The customer is back. We've cleared the storm. We're ready to start buying. It's very much calculated, careful, and cautious. And so look for China not to be an engine of global economic growth, but just sort of gradually regaining stability in the market. That's on the car side. Now, one of the questions that's come up is ride sharing. And I did talk to my friends in the office there in Beijing, our colleagues, and many of them take DD, which is the equivalent of our Uber and Lyft. And they recount how when you enter a DD now, there are signs. First of all, most importantly, there's a sealed plastic wrap that separates the driver from the passenger in the back seat. And then each car has a certificate showing that it's been completely cleaned and disinfected. Now, who knows? But that people are taking DDs, and DDs quite bullish about their ability to withstand the storm of the coronavirus. They're running almost as normal given the conditions.
Wow, that's surprising. And I've wondered, will we see something like those temperature checks you mentioned earlier? Like, would you have to do something like that at some point feasibly to take a ride-hailed vehicle?
That's right. Step outside, check your temperature. Sorry, you're not welcome in my car.
That's such a profound societal, you know, thing right there with, you know, related to privacy, related to mobility opportunity. And, you know, we talk a lot about inclusive mobility. And
yes,
you know, we're going to say, hey, if you're sick, you can't participate in this system. That's a, you know, at the very least, something that's going to take quite a while to wrap our heads around, but in fact, needs to be implemented rather quickly here.
That's right. Well, from the point of view of the commuter, how do I get to work if not in this Didi or in this Uber? I got to get to work.
Michael, do you see the same anxiousness in China about responding to coronavirus and kind of taking the precautions that close down society to really fight it? It's hard to see here in the United States where there's so many protests going on, where, you know, there's just kind of the will to not have to sacrifice our everyday freedoms of moving around.
This will be America's biggest single challenge in the next 6 to 9 months is can we continue to be vigilant, careful, disciplined. In China, they really don't have much choice. It's mandated and everybody must comply. End of story. Here in an open democratic society, individual preferences and choice is number one. And unfortunately, if we veer away from our vigilance, the risks go way up. So it will be a real test of our ability to stay disciplined in order to tamp the virus down until a vaccine arrives. It runs totally counter to what we're accustomed to, what we like, what we're used to, what it means to be American. So it's a challenge. Let's step up and meet it.
Absolutely. What should some of the North American companies here, be they the, you know, traditional automotive players or some of the Silicon Valley tech companies, what should they know? What should they understand about doing business in China right now, about the opportunities that might present themselves coming out of COVID?
Well, you know, it's so tempting. The market's massive. Didi's talking about offering 100 million orders, booking 100 million orders by 2022, which is just a phenomenal number. The car market is still going to be 20 million plus a year. So from the outside looking in, it looks like, wow, how do we get in there and get our share? And the reality is, and this is so important, Pete, and I'd love to give you a different message, but the reality is that today, the markets and market access are totally asymmetrical. You need to joint venture with a Chinese company. They control the mapping. Intellectual property is definitely at risk, and the court system in China doesn't guarantee much at all. And by the same token, Chinese companies can step into the California, own their business 100%, and enjoy the protections of the U.S. legal system and tap into our R&D talent. So China's not making apologies. It's just the way their system is set up. They're a closed market. We're an open one. And for U.S. tech companies, that's really an incredible challenge. How do we enter and compete in a market so different from our own when much of what we're accustomed to in our home market just not available in China?
That's interesting you bring that up. I was just talking with a company the other day about their frustrations with that, you know, asymmetrical environment that you talked about in general, and then they were concerned about IP theft in particular. And it just seems like, as you mentioned, that's going to be an inherent tension that has no easy solution right now.
You almost see, Pete, you almost see the emergence of one globe, two systems. So if, as we speak today, when you go into China, as I do so often, I don't have access to Gmail, to Google, YouTube, Twitter, New York Times, Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, all of those are blocked by the Great Firewall of China. So information is tightly controlled. And by extension, you could imagine a world in which AV technologies and EV technologies and connected technologies will be developed along parallel lines, not one in the United States and one in China. That seems to be the direction right now.
That's fascinating to even think about, that we have, not one worldwide repository of information that we can all access on a free internet, but two, as you said, two parallel systems. It may take me a minute or two to wrap my head around that, but that's a very important point.
It doesn't seem to make sense, and yet, hey, let's be realistic. China does that today with 1.4 billion people. And often my friends in China will call me and say, we heard this on our news today. Now, these are people who have traveled the world. They're global, highly educated. They'll say, well, we heard this from our information, from our news sources today in China. What are you guys hearing over there? Does it match up? How different is it? So, for example, I can tell you, just overnight, I was speaking to an executive from a first-tier supplier, and he said, you know what, in China, the narrative right now is that COVID-19 is actually a U.S. problem. The epicenter is New York, and foreigners are actually a threat when they step into China. They're a threat. You know, there's a ban now. Foreigners are not allowed to travel to China. So my friend, he's from New York, and he wears a New York Yankees baseball cap around. And he said, no one gets in his way. Everyone steps aside because from their perspective, the problem is America and Americans, and that's where the virus is really thriving. So, I mean, match that up with the typical perspective of an American and you couldn't be further apart.
That's a great illustration of those two very different systems of information right there. Tell me about, last year when you were on the podcast, we talked a lot about the trade tensions between the U.S. and China. And, they were at, sort of a peak back then when we talked. The two countries signed a phase one agreement this past January. Mm-hmm. Has that eased tensions at all? Or is there still kind of those underlying problems?
There's some fundamental issues that still have to be sorted out. And it begins and ends with the fact that you were really talking about two distinctly different political economic systems. How do those two get along? I'm often reminded of Rudyard Kipling, the famous British poet's line, East is East and West is West, and never the twain shall meet. So here we are 100 years after he wrote that. We're still wrestling with that.
I think this is the first time that Kipling has been quoted on the Shift podcast. Perfect. I like this.
A genius quote. He also said something else I thought just to share with my fellow, people from America. He wrote, this is 100 years ago, he wrote, Asia will not be, in his words, will not be civilized by methods of the West. There is too much Asia and she is too old. Now, what the heck does that mean? Basically, he's saying the cultures of Asia are so strong and so deeply entrenched and have been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years. We should be very careful stepping into Asian markets and thinking that, well, we're here and bring it. We definitely need to adapt to survive and thrive in Asia.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's enough of Kipling for now.
No, it's interesting how you find something that's a century old, yet it still holds up well today.
Still holding up.
Yeah. You touched on how easy it is for Chinese companies to come here and set up shop and do business. I wanted to ask you specifically about, let's start here. During this whole COVID crisis, we've seen a big pivot toward delivery. And, Are you seeing the same things in China that we're seeing in North America on that front?
Yes, absolutely. So if we tick off who are the leaders in China in terms of autonomous technology, of course, Baidu, the Google of China, is out front. They have the Baidu Apollo program. But there are some really interesting companies right on there, not far behind them. One is Pony, of course, AutoX, WeRide, and Too Simple, which is based here in San Diego. And those companies we've seen, as well as Nuro. Nuro and Pony have both started deliveries here in California. They pivoted to deliveries. And the genesis of that is of course, China in February and March. They saw that the demand was for contactless delivery of goods and items that were in need. And China moved very quickly to start doing delivery, including Didi started doing delivery. So it started in China and it's being applied now in California.
And they're not just doing it. We should note that they have received permits from the California DMV to test these, driverless vehicles that have no safety driver aboard, which I think is kind of the key distinction here. So they are not just testing, but they're through some regulatory hoops to make this happen.
It's happening. It's happening. And to compare that, we can say for sure there is no American autonomous tech company anywhere remotely close to that kind of commercial application in China. No way.
And we've seen some companies, Aptiv comes to mind, set up offices there. But to your point, we certainly have not heard about any on the ground substantial progress in that respect.
That's right. For those of us who have visited or spent time in Beijing, just north of it is this massive structure called the Great Wall. For me, after 30 years in China, that's a perfect metaphor for doing business in China. You step in, you set up your office, and then you begin to climb the wall. You don't step in and things start happening right away. It'll take months and years to get going.
Michael, it seems like, we're talking about delivery now, and we should mention that Baidu within the last couple of days has started a robo-taxi service for human passengers that's now fully open to the public in the Hunan province, if I remember correctly. So it seems like perhaps they're ahead on both fronts, both delivery and passenger service.
You're right. It points to the way China works. So the government sets the direction. The Chinese Communist Party and the government sets a goal to say, we want to lead in autonomous technology. It's part of their Made in China 2025 blueprint. We're going to be the leaders in autonomous technology. And how do we get there? Well, they give license to these entrepreneurial companies to develop the technology. And then those companies go back to the government and say, hey, to make this work and for everyone to make money here, we need regulatory support. And they get it really quickly. And we're seeing that, just as you say, in Changsha, Hunan, which is a province in South Central China, it's happening. And the Chinese are always seemingly quicker to commercialize technology than we are. We're still the fount of the best technology, we being California, U.S., but in terms of commercialization, it's very tough to beat the Chinese. They get there quickly with the support of their local and central governments.
Very interesting. You wrote the book, American Wheels, Chinese Roads. So tell me if I'm wrong here, but what's changed from the era that you described in your book when that took place? What we're essentially saying now is China no longer needs the American wheels. It may need the technology to get started, but they're doing a fine job implementing and commercializing it on their own.
You know what, Pete, that's a great point, because you're exactly right. China for decades was hoping to secure technology from the big three, and for that matter, from the Germans and the Japanese. And for one reason or another, it didn't quite work out. Enter new technologies like AVs, EVs, and connected. And China says, hey, wait a second, we don't need to do tech transfer anymore. We can actually develop and own this technology and lead ourselves. And that's been a huge game changer. That's the direction China is taking right now.
Okay. When we talk about the AV companies in China, you mentioned Baidu, AutoX, Too Simple, DD, obviously on the ride hailing front. Do you get a sense of who's ahead and to what extent they're ahead when it comes to the widespread deployment of automated vehicles?
You're looking at really Baidu's ahead technically, but commercialization is where the rubber meets the road. So we see Pony, WeRide, AutoX moving very quickly with local governments like those in Guangdong province or Hunan province or Shanghai to accelerate the commercialization of their technologies. And that's going to prove out who's the winner or loser. Right now, I think every Chinese autonomous tech company would concede that Baidu's ahead, but Baidu may not be as quick as the others to commercialize. That's the thing to watch.
I see. Okay. Going back to your example of standing before the Great Wall, and that's essentially the wall that American businesses have to scale to do business in China, give us a taste of what you counsel American companies here without giving away your secret sauce. What's the advice for scaling that to some extent?
Okay, so a couple of things. One is a couple of big trends. This coronavirus has definitely been a wake-up call for all global companies, and we are seeing a trend for global companies to shift out of China, not leave China, but shift some of their investments and capabilities out of China to other promising Southeast Asian markets and India. So if I'm sitting in America and I have a technology or I have ambitions to grow in Asia, my first look right now would be, what are the alternatives outside of China? A couple of big candidates, or obvious candidates. One is India. The second one being Vietnam. Think of Vietnam as sort of a junior China, very hardworking, smart people, population of 100 million. They're going to get there. Another candidate would be Thailand, which has a terrific auto industry and exports more than 1 million vehicles a year. And Indonesia, which has is the fourth most populous country in the world after the U.S., after China, India, and the U.S. So there are other opportunities outside of China to be seized upon, and that's the direction we see many clients going in right now.
Very interesting. I would have spent hours trying to guess which country was the fourth most populous in the world. And I think it's taken me a good long while to get to Indonesia.
Who would have guessed Indonesia? Nobody. But they have something like 250 million people in that country.
That is very interesting. Michael, we've talked about Zozo Go and your business a little bit, and I know our listeners can go to your website, sign up for your newsletter. I also want to hear more about the podcast that you recently started, Winning in Asia. What do you have going on there?
That's right. So the idea is that since I returned to the United States a few years ago, after having lived in Asia for almost 30 years, I came to understand that there's still a gap in between the United States and China and Asia. And that gap comes down to this. How do we make money in Asia? How do we win and how do we prevail in Asia despite all of the obstacles, despite all the differences in language, culture, regulations, customers, competitors? It's also very different. How can we find a way to win? And what we're fortunate enough to have now is a track record of Western companies who have gone in to Asia and have done very well. For example, Mercedes is killing it in China, sells twice as many cars in China as it does in the United States. Apple, of course, Nike, Starbucks. What have they done differently to prevail in those tough markets? What can we learn from them? And by talking to leaders from those companies, we take those learnings and share them with a wider audience here in the United States.
Michael, what is your website for Zozo Go?
Yes, please visit us at www.zozogo.com. There you can sign up for the newsletter. We also have this fun weekly video called Ask Me Anything, short video, 2-3 minutes. And then most importantly, you'll be able to sign up for our new podcast next month in May. In fact, our first guest is Joe Hinrichs, the former president of Ford Motor Company.
Excellent. Well, in the spirit of asking you anything, I will close with this question. After you spent 30 years living in Asia, what was the most unusual or hardest thing to get used to once you moved back to the United States?
Ah, great question. The U.S. is a very easy place to move into, to adjust to, because administratively, it's amazingly efficient, whether it's banking or ordering things online, very efficient, easy place. And in China or in Asia, there's always a couple of extra steps you need to take to get something done. And in those steps, you're actually connecting with people and building relationships as part of it. And so I kind of miss here in the United States that, ironically, those extra steps where you have to actually spend time with people to work through things. And when I was in Asia, I didn't want to do them. But now that I'm not there, I've kind of missed some, if that makes any sense at all. That's the biggest adjustment. It's just sort of, okay, where is the sense of close, sustained connection between people that you have in Asia? That's it. Pete, that sounds really, if that sounded really sort of wishy-washy, it is. I don't have a good, solid, you know, the biggest change, probably the food. The biggest adjustment coming back to the United States for me is that Asia offers so many kinds of delicious food, from Thai to Vietnamese to Indonesian to China to Japanese. And here in the United States, I find that when it comes to eating, it's very much about efficiency and just eating to fill one's, you know, fill oneself up and then move on.
Sure.
Yeah. I miss the food and the time spent with others eating food together. That's what I miss.
Well, that is interesting because I do feel like, you know, we're kind of getting off on a culinary ending here, but the range of you know, the range of China's cuisine is probably, like, you know, has to be the best in the world. And it's so different from region to region. And I can imagine that would be hard to adjust to, you know, what's served up as in one Chinese restaurant here as kind of a singular culture.
That's right. That's right. When Asians come to the United States, they're pining for their food back home. That's it.
Excellent. Well, Michael, thank you for your insight, and thank you for making the time to talk with us today.
Terrific. Thank you, Pete. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Pete, for the conversation with Michael. What's your big takeaway here? What should we be thinking about over the next couple of days, just since things move so quickly that seems to be the limit on our information here?
Yeah, you know, and I think Michael certainly had a lot of valuable insights on the current climate in Asia and some general strategy on how companies here can approach doing business there. One takeaway for me was thinking about how many of the Chinese automated vehicle companies are here in the U.S. Testing and really kind of accelerating their efforts, thinking about Plus AI, thinking about Too Simple for two examples off the top of my head. And you know, I think that bears further watching, and I'm going to wrap my head around that for a little while. In the meantime, I know, Leslie, we have another good episode in the On Deck Circle of what's coming up on the Shift podcast.
Yeah, so please join us starting on Monday. We have a great conversation. It's a little bit of a change of pace for us. We spoke with Brian Johnson. Brian is the city manager for Peachtree Corners, Georgia, which is right outside of Atlanta. And this is a smart city. He's going to talk to us about smart cities and about an incubator and also a test track that they have to test innovative technologies. It's called Curiosity Lab. And so we're also going to talk about 5G, and we're going to talk about how COVID-19 is impacting all of these things. So please join us on Monday for our conversation with Brian Johnson.
That'll do it for today. Thank you again for listening, and we'll be back again soon.